What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the JTS Podcast. My name is Marcus Marty. Alongside my partners, Patton Cook and Gabe Jones. Yes, we know it's been a little minute since you guys last heard of us, but just due to busy schedules and everybody ripping and running, we haven't found a good time, but now we do, and we're going to get right into it because the last time you guys heard us was the NBA Finals was going on, but that is concluded, and the Milwaukee Bucks finish it in six, so we all was dead wrong on that. But Giannis Antetokounmpo gets Finals MVP and just dominates like we all thought he would when he came back and played. But he started game one just plain and simple, and the Bucks got it done four straight. Like the Bucks fans was going lit. I think it was about 60,000 to 70,000 people out there in Fear the Deer District, and they was going ballistic. And Giannis gets his first ring. Gabe, I know, still feel some type of way, but I'm going to go ahead and say it, that Giannis is the best in the world as of right now. But, Patton, go ahead, man.
Well, what an NBA Finals. And kind of one thing I want to touch on first, Mark, is what you mentioned, Giannis going right back into game one. And I'm not sure I saw that coming. I'm not sure many people saw it coming. But if we kind of go back and briefly look at it, I don't think Giannis was expecting it until he kind of did his pregame warm-up for game one, and he can kind of just felt right. So they said, well, we might as well just see how it goes. And Giannis had a heck of a night in game one. But the thing is, the Suns won the first two games. They started out 2-0, 0-2, however you want to say it. And I think whenever that happened, I thought I was feeling pretty good about my prediction. I was thinking Chris Paul and Devin Booker and company were kind of living up to the task, but give credit. One guy I want to shout out before Giannis is Chris Middleton, a guy who was supposed to be the reason that Giannis was going to leave Milwaukee, was because he wasn't living up to his fitting of the bill, if you will. But he was all as advertised throughout three through six is what it turned out to be. So credit to Milwaukee in this one. One thing I will say, happy for a smaller market. We just haven't seen this much since the Cleveland Cavaliers won in 2016. It's kind of been these bigger teams, LA, Golden State, teams like that kind of getting it done. But it just kind of shows, that gives hopes to team like Memphis or a Cleveland in the future, or a Portland Trailblazers, that if you do it right, it can be done. And Milwaukee did do this right. They built it through the draft. They did make one big key trade to get a Holiday in there. But other than that, it's been pretty well done through the draft and kind of just low free agent moves. Bobby Portis, a guy who coming in and just making a huge impact later in the series. So give credit to this Milwaukee organization. They saw a lot of criticism come their way in the bubble down there in Orlando, but they've made it all right after getting this NBA championship. And quite frankly, I know the odds don't show it, but to me, they're the favorite leading into next season, because I think the thing with Giannis, he just keeps getting better year to year. He keeps taking on the load, improving his game as a whole. So that Milwaukee's showing no signs of really slowing down, and they're bringing the majority of their pieces back.
Dude, shout out to Milwaukee. Yes, Giannis, he said he did this the hard way. So shout out to him being able to capture a championship, especially when going down 2-0 against the Phoenix Suns. And then they kind of just figured it out. Giannis, he was he was literally unstoppable. His lowest scoring game, he scored 20 points in that first game where we didn't know whether he would play or not. And then it was like 30, 40, 40, 26, 50. So he just dropped buckets. It wasn't no stopping him. Jrue Holiday, he ended up having one good offensive game. Otherwise, he was just immaculate on defense. Talking about just pointing to that game seven, Jrue Holiday had a play in which he was guarding Devin Booker on the three-point line, maybe like the top of the key, left side of it, right? And Book goes for like a jab step fake one way and then goes to the right. Now, Jrue Holiday not only read Devin Booker's mind, because if you read somebody's mind, you know that takes time to read. It's like he jumped into the future of where Devin Booker was going to be and just took the ball out of his hands and then went down for a dunk. Like, it was the best. It might have been the best steal that I've ever seen in my life. So he was absolutely fantastic on defense. And then Middleton, he chipped in where he could. That game, once again, it was a godly game from Giannis. At one point in the game, I think the rest of the team was like 14 for 44, while Giannis was like 12 for 21. So the rest of the team shot bad. Giannis just carried them over the edge, and he showed why he is in the argument for the best player in the world. But, of course, we give him the crown right now.
I will say, Drew Holiday, what his plans was known for this finals was his defense, because he shot terrible for majority of the finals. But, hey, his disruptiveness against Chris Paul and Devin Booker played a factor. Even in the first two games, I don't know if y'all guys realize, but whoever he wasn't guarding and was like that main guy, whether it was Chris Paul or whether it was Devin Booker, they didn't shoot well at all. And then he switched more over to Chris Paul in the latter part of the series, and it worked. Chris Paul, I don't know what happened to you, buddy. I don't know if it was the finger. I don't know, because, you know, Malika Andrews asked him about the finger after game one, and Chris Paul was like, I don't know what you're talking about. So, hey, I don't know what happened. It's just that you didn't get it done. Chris Paul, are you going to run it back? But it was tough. I didn't like how the performance that he took, because I feel like after those last three games, especially game three, four, and five, it seemed like he was only taking 14 to 15 shots. And I think for the Suns, I think they needed him to be a little bit more aggressive, because Devin Booker, he was hooping. Don't get me wrong. He was balling out. He was trying to put his team on his back. And it just wasn't enough. Ayton, I know a lot of people was hating on and downplaying Ayton's performance, but you got to realize Giannis, he's guarding Giannis, who's arguably could be stronger, who is faster, and is the same height and maybe longer than him. That's a tough task for a guy that's only 22 years old. Just plain and simple. And I didn't think he played a terrible game. It's just that he had somebody on the other side that was that averaged for the finals 36 on 60% shooting. That's the deal breaker there.
Yeah. For Ayton, what can you do? You're not going to guard him from the perimeter if you are Ayton. And if you give him too much space, he's going to get ahead of steam and he's going to come in and dunk on you. And then as far as you playing, you are your team's best chance at defending him. So you can't guard him too aggressive, or you'll foul out, get into foul trouble, as we saw multiple times over the games this series. And if you can't play him hard, then he's going to dunk on you. And then, and then if you are out, then your team basically has no chance at guarding him. So he did as good as he could. I don't know. What did you think, Pat?
Yeah, I just thought kind of as a whole, I thought the kind of strategy towards Phoenix and what they're going to do to Giannis was just pretty basic. I thought they were going to try and do what Bam Adebayo and the Miami Heat did. But the thing with Bam, he had a lot of help around him kind of defensively. It just kind of felt like they were leaving Ayton out there. And it's like, you stop the best player in the world right now, the most physically dominant player we've seen probably since Shaquille O'Neal. And that's just a tough task, as you mentioned, for a literal kid who just a year ago was able to buy alcohol. So, I mean, it's just kind of an unfortunate thing for Phoenix in that regard. On Chris Paul, I just thought he ran out of gas. And the thing with him is, at this late stage of his career, this is the first time he's ever been to the finals, and this is the longest he's ever played an NBA season. So I think there was some factoring into that where he just kind of didn't have anything left in the gas tank. So that's a tough one for Chris Paul. I'd like to see him run it back in Phoenix. I'd like to see him do that, but I'm not sure. I know the numbers being quoted right now. I'm not sure Phoenix is willing to kind of offer that. There's some other guys out there that you could look at. Kyle Lowry, I know, is a trade factor right now. I don't know how much stock you want to put into that or not, but the numbers that Chris Paul's winning right now, rightfully so, had one of his better years of his career. It's a big number, and it's a big number against the Caps. So we'll see how Phoenix does that. But for DeAndre Ayton, his first NBA Finals, his first playoff run, I thought he did more than enough as a 22-year-old going up against the best player in the NBA. Offensively as well, I know Giannis was on him for the majority of the game as well when they did end up going small. So he's going to learn from this. He's going to learn kind of where to pick and choose. And I will say this, guys, I thought the turning point of the series was that block that Giannis had on DeAndre Ayton. I just thought after that, I think the wind came out of the sails down there in Phoenix, and it came out of my sails and my Phoenix Suns championship pick.
Yeah, I will say Giannis had some blocks that will be memorable for his whole legacy. I think those are some legacy-made blocks. Even the chase-down blocks that he had, the block against Ayton, where he literally defended the roller. He defended the lob at the latter part. But he hedged hard enough to stop the guard. I can't remember if that was Booker. I think it was Booker. Yeah, I believe it was Booker. Stop him from getting a jump shot off or a penetration, and then be able to come back and block that shot. That was textbook. Just what an amazing effort. And then to drop 50 points in the game six. Guys, I just want to let y'all know that Giannis now leads the NBA in finals history with the most 20-point games in a quarter. He surpassed Jordan. And a lot of guys saying that he can't shoot, but he does what he does best and be extremely effective with it. So if you're saying he don't have skill, I'll question your basketball IQ and whatnot, because he does it at extremely high level. No man without skill is going to shoot 36 points on 60% shooting, just plain and simple. That's not an easy thing to do. And then also in game six, I blame Chris Paul as well for calling him out on his free throws, because in game six, he goes 17 of 19.
Yeah.
Now, Chris Paul, you didn't talk bad about him after game five. He might have, if he went 12 of 19, you got a chance, because that's a ball game. Then he might not want to get to the free throw line as much, but he hit his free throws. I don't know if he had his sliders up. I don't know if he talked to Steph Curry the night before. I don't know what happened, but he hit all his free throws, and that was a game changer. Because that's another thing too, is that you have to foul Giannis and hope he misses free throws, because he's going to attack the basket ferociously. And that's what he did all game six. When, like Gabe pointed out, they shot terrible. Giannis was the only efficient scorer for majority of the game six, where he scored basically half of their points until the end. So you have to try to stop him some way. When he hits free throws, just Gabe, another point. You better hope this man don't continue to hit free throws like that, or he's going to continue to be the best in the world. That's all I'm going to say.
That is it. Now, this game was one game. It could be an anomaly, because over this this series, he shot under 62% from the free throw line. He shot only 61. So that game was an anomaly. Now, if he is able to make free throws at that high of a clip, is really no stopping this man. And good luck to everybody else in the NBA. But we shall see. Yet to be seen.
And he really doesn't even have to make his three-pointers. If he makes his free throws, that's as good as the three-pointers, because he gets fouled probably 7 or 8 times a game. So I think that's a great point. I think the whole Giannis free throw debacle has been my favorite storyline of the NBA. It started out in the first round where they're counting to 10. I mean, it's just great basketball, great viewing, great television. So I enjoy that. Credit goes to Giannis in that game six, because that's been a criticism of LeBron since he's entered the league, and he's never really found that out. And that's, for whatever reason that is, whether Giannis can find that out, we'll have to see. But it's just an odd statistic that you see, just guys like that. They can figure out everything else, but when it comes to the free throw line, they can never really perfect that, especially at the three-point line for LeBron. He's gotten so good at it now. It's just amazing he hasn't gotten to just an 80% free throw shooter.
All right, we're going to send it to a quick break, and then when we come back, Gabe, you're going to have to go ahead and tell the listeners how wrong we were with our predictions as well before we send it and talk about the NBA draft. But we'll be right back here with more Just Talking Sports.
All right, getting into it. So we made some predictions before the finals happened, and I have the results of said predictions here. I will say this before I go about it. Patton, congratulations. You had the best record on those predictions. And yet all of us still went negative. So let's get to it. In the case of the Suns winning in 6 or 7 games, Patton, Marcus, you were both incorrect. And I had the Suns at 7, also incorrect. We had CP3 as Finals MVP. Incorrect. So Giannis scoring over or under 31 points. Marcus, Patton, you guys put under. You guys were incorrect. I had over, so I got that one right. We have Giannis making over 8 threes. I had the over. Incorrect. You guys had under. Correct. I think he made 3 for the series. 62%. Giannis shooting over 62%. All 3 of us said over. We were wrong. He shot 61%. Chris Paul, over 2.5 30-point games. You guys said – oh, no, no, no. Me and Marcus said over. We were incorrect. Patton, you said under. You were correct. D-Book, averaging 28 points over or under. Marcus, you said under. You were wrong. He got over. He was at like 28.2. A triple double game from someone. All 3 of us put yes. All 3 of us were wrong. Drew Holiday, 20 points. Marcus, Patton, both of you guys said over. Both of you guys were incorrect. I had the under. Chris Middleton, 22 points. Marcus, Patton, Gabe. We all 3 said over. We all 3 were right. He averaged 24 for the series. And for the last one, DeAndre Ayton, averaging 17 points for the series. Marcus, Patton, both of you guys said over. Both of you guys were wrong. I had the under. He ended up averaging 14 points for a combined record, or for a record of 3-7. No, 2-8 for Marcus. 4-6 for Patton and 3-7 for myself. So we did pretty bad this time, you guys. We're going to have to do better. It's okay. We're working on it.
As long as folks didn't bet on our stuff, it's perfectly fine.
and we really don't advise that either. All advise, go to the professionals, not to us scumbags over here trying to pick.
We're not financial advisors.
Yeah, I was just knew for sure that Giannis was going to be out those first 2 games, so that's why I came with a lot of that. I think all of us had that same mindset as well. So when he played game 1, if we knew playing game 1, we probably had a lot of different choices. But let's go ahead and hit on the NBA draft, because the NBA draft was just this past weekend, and Kay Cunningham is going to Detroit. Jalen Green is going to the Rockets. Patton's Cleveland Cavaliers pick Evan Mobley. Jonathan Kuminga is going to the Raptors. Jalen Suggs is going to the Magic. And then Josh Giddey is going to the Thunder. And Scotty Barnes is at 7 going – no, excuse me. Scotty Barnes is going to Toronto. Jonathan Kuminga is going to the Warriors. There we go. Now, Patton, I have to come to you about this, because – what is your team trying to do after they drafted Evan Mobley and then they traded for Ricky Rubio as well? So what is the mindset for you guys?
Well, kind of after sleeping on it and looking at all the reports and stuff like that, one of the main needs was a backup point guard, kind of to come off the bench and kind of lead that second unit alongside Colin Sexton, who kind of in the second half of the season had been getting subbed out about 3 or 4 minutes into the opening game. And then that way he could really just run the second unit all by himself. And so really they wanted to bring in a backup point guard, Dellavedova, Matthew Dellavedova. He is going back to Australia after the Olympics is over. He's going to play over there. So a need at backup point guard, a veteran kind of to be in there, kind of foster the young guards, and Garland and Sexton was needed. And Ricky Rubio was that player. And Cavs got a second round pick out of it. They gave up Torian Prince, who I must say, he exceeded my expectations. I'd kind of seen him in and out of Brooklyn lineup for quite a bit. And of course, he's the memorable a player for Baylor who was asked, how did Yale out-rebound you? And as well, they just jumped up, grabbed the ball off the rim more than us. So it's a great quote by him. But Taurean Prince, he's a great knockdown shooter. I think I believe Minnesota, right, is going to enjoy him for a lot. And he's just kind of going to stand in the three-point line, shoot it well, a very good defender, which is something Minnesota needs desperately, as we've mentioned. Gabe's all-team no defense is have quite a few of them on there in Minnesota. But for the Cavs, they got Ricky Rubio, and then on to Evan Mobley, and got Jared Allen right now at the center position. He is going to be the five, Marcus, in my opinion. And what they're looking at with Evan Mobley right now is, even though it's 7 feet, they see him as playing power forward. They see him being eventually being a good enough shooter that he can kind of stretch the floor. And right now, when you look at his defensive ability, he's got great feet quickness. So he's not really going to get beat off the dribble by many fours in this league, except maybe Anthony Davis, if he does choose to play the four, probably something we'll talk about a little bit later on with a move. But they see Evan Mobley at the four right now. Isn't the shooter that they need him to be right now, I'd say, at the four. That's something he has to work on. He is so very raw, only a freshman coming out of USC. But one thing I have seen talked about is he was kind of getting away with kind of just being the biggest guy on the floor, the most talented guy on the floor for a very long time. And then at USC, the first couple of games, he realized, I can't just dominate anyone anymore. There's guys who are 7 feet, and if not, they're bigger and stronger than me. So he started to really develop at USC. So what the Cavs see from him is possibly he's got the highest ceiling of this draft. And whether you agree with that or not, I think Jalen Green personally has that highest ceiling, and Cade Cunningham, I believe, has the highest floor. I just don't see him being a bad player in this league just with how the play is. But for Evan Mobley, the Cavs are looking at him with the floor, and you're going to have 2 7-footers out on the floor with 2 very small guards. So one final thing for me, Marcus, is they see kind of Jared Allen and Evan Mobley kind of making up for the lack of defense at their guard position. And I'm interested to see kind of how that works. Darius Garland looks to have grown about 3 or 4 inches this summer. I am just kind of looking at him standing next to a Travis Kelce. I see him being taller. So that's something to look out for in the upcoming season. I look forward to Evan Mobley and Isaac Okoro in the summer league in a couple of weeks. But that's kind of what I see from the Cavs. And this move isn't a great fit. Nothing was going to be a great fit. It was either going to be him or Jalen Green, and they went with a center because they really do trust these guards, I think.
Yeah, I was just wondering, because you know, you still got Kevin Love with that contract, and not knowing any team that's going to just be willing to take that contract even at all. So drafting Evan Mobley, I understand where he was coming from. You want those young guys to be playing out there. I was seeing a lot about Sexton or Garland. If one of them was getting traded, that's the reason why they went with Mobley. That's the reason why they might have traded for Ricky Rubio. It's just, we got to wait and see on that one. I think the most interesting one move out of that top seven was Toronto getting Scottie Barnes, because it kind of got the Magic like, all right. Because I saw a lot that Jonathan Kumunga was going to go to the Magic. Seemed like every draft board had him going to the Magic, and then that happened. It was like the Magic was like, oh, well, we got to take the best guy that we think is available right now, and that's Jalen Suggs. I think Jalen Suggs to the Magic is a solid pick. You got Cole Anthony, Jalen Suggs over there. I'm kind of glad, too, because even if Evan Mobley would have dropped out outside of the Cavs, they already got way too many centers over there in Orlando. So I think Jalen Suggs will be the right move for the Magic. And then I think for the Thunder, we got one of the best passers in Josh Giddey. I know the Grizzlies, they actually moved up in the draft quite a bit. And there was a lot of talks that they wanted Josh Giddey, the kid from Australia. He actually played in the NBL this past season. I think you would like him a lot if you look at his tape. But he's an exceptional passer. He's not extremely as athletic as other people are, but you got to realize he's 6'9", and they anticipate him to be 7 foot. Putting him at the three with that passing ability, coming off pick and rolls and everything, could be pretty dangerous for the Thunder. So I like that pick a lot. And then Jonathan Kumunga with the Warriors. Hey, Patton, I just want to say this now. The Warriors, if healthy, they looking pretty dangerous, sir. That's all I'm gonna say. They got a real shot of trying to run it back for the one time if they healthy with the draft picks that they picked up.
I think that go ahead, Pat.
No, well, I'll just say this. In terms of the Warriors drafting, they haven't been good drafting since they drafted Draymond Green. And I'll leave it at that. I'm not too worried about their drafting ability now.
Last year was their first lottery pick and since Draymond? So
fair enough, but I'm not worried because my Cavaliers are nowhere near I've got really no reason to worry about them right now other than my own personal hate. So I do see where you're coming from in that avenue. Warriors, they got some stuff to worry about. I think health is going to be an issue. Klay Thompson, he continually gets hurt. Steph Curry, last year was really his first year in a while that he really hasn't been consistently hurt. So I've seen some training video of Steph Curry, whether he's going to go back or not. So just a quick hit on the Warriors. I could talk about my hate for them for this entire podcast, but I don't want to bore anyone on the end of their headphones right now.
I wasn't a huge fan of what the Magic did in this draft. Jalen Suggs, Franz Wagner. I'm not a huge fan of the foreign big men that aren't, I guess, dominant. If they're kind of Lauri Markkanen type players, like they have a ceiling as far as what you can do with them. They can play a role, depending on what role that you can fit them into. The Magic also have terrible luck drafting big men. Suggs pairing him with Cole Anthony, both guys aren't that big in the backcourt. You're going to eventually have to get rid of one of them. Either one of them is going to raise up and become better than the other one. You're going to have to get rid of one of them. Josh Giddey to the Thunder. I was interested to see what the Thunder would do because there were reports, which I'm not sure if these were confirmed or not, but there were reports that the Thunder offered the Pistons SGA and the sixth pick. Is that true, Marcus? Do you know if that's true or not?
That all I would say is I didn't see it from Woj, I didn't see it from Mark Stein, and I didn't see it from Royce Young. Those were the three. As soon as I saw that report, those were the three guys I was looking at. And I know for a lot of Thunder fans, Royce Young is that guy that we will go to immediately. And I didn't see anything from him, so I'm gonna call it baloney. That's all I'm gonna call it.
Okay, right on. Then I will stand by that then, because the question is like, SGA, he is certified. Like, I don't think a lot of people know just how good he is. He averaged like 24 points this year, shot 50, 40, like 80, something from the free throw line. He'd give you about 6 assists, about 5 rebounds, and he was single-handedly winning y'all games. Like, Sam Presti, thank God that he got hurt. He was, thank you that he got hurt because he was trying to tank and he was ruining it. He was literally – they were winning games. They were winning games whenever SGA played. So that would have been I see the reason for the trade, but, you know, the Pistons, if it were real, the Pistons declined it. They would have declined a surefire guy for a guy that could have, like, a lower floor and he could change your franchise. But, once again, SGA is a certified dude. But let's say it didn't exist. The Hornets getting James Bouknight, they have a myriad of guards that are already pretty, pretty good. They're going to have to figure out – they already have to figure out what they're going to do with LaMelo, with Scary Terry, and with
Graham.
Yes,
and he's
Graham.
A free agent, I think, Devontae is.
It just reports now that they're making him a restricted free agent. Yep, they made him an offer now. So
yeah, so – What are they going to do with all these guards? So I wasn't a huge fan of that pick, but, you know, at some point you do have to take the best player that is available and figure it out from there.
I got a question for you guys about the Grizzlies moving up and then picking Zaire Williams from Stanford, because I know a lot of Memphis folks was extremely questionable on why moving up, thinking that he would be that pick, because a lot of people thought of I just lost his name. Who you just said, Gabe?
Oh, you talking about Bouknight?
Yes. Yeah. Everybody thought about Bouknight. But that pick with Williams, Yeah, I want to get your guys' take on it. I think he will be a solid player for the Grizzlies. It's just that I think they didn't have to move up to get him. And I think that's why a lot of people were upset, is because they moved up to get him when they could have stayed at their current spot and still had an opportunity to get him.
And a lot of times when that happens, just from what I understand and kind of listening to draft experts and stuff like that, they usually get word that a team ahead of them is going to take them, whether that's a bluff or not, a poker play. But if Memphis just sees him as good as everybody else, you'd rather them go up and take him, spend a second round pick or whatever they gave up for him, just to make sure you get that guy. But I think the trouble that Memphis is in right now, it all really divides on what Jaren Jackson does, because if he can be that guy, that kind of eliminates a whole position and really a whole four and five position for you, because he can play both of them. But I just think they're in an odd little limbo right now where they really don't know if Jaren Jackson is going to be that second star alongside Ja Morant. And it's just tough to find that second star where they were in the draft, because they did so very well to nearly get into that playoff position. But it's just kind of a tough limbo that they're in. And it's going to be interesting to see what teams like that do. And you can kind of draft as much as you want, but ultimately I think what they're going to need to kind of take that next hump, they're going to need to get a trade like a Drew Holiday. And I know we're going a little bit off the deep end here, but I just don't see them. They're not a lottery team anymore. I think they're going to continually fighting on for playoff position. They can't continue kind of picking at the 18th, 19th range when they really need that second or third guy. And I just don't know if they're going to find that in the draft picking at that spot.
We do got to let the people know that, Gabe, before I let you go, that Jonas Valanciunas did get traded to New Orleans, and then New Orleans gave the Grizzlies that pick, and then also Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams. So Jaren Jackson can still stay at the four. I think probably the best thing for that trade would maybe be Kyle Anderson, so he can stay at that three spot and not have to go really exceptional with that small ball. But go ahead, Gabe.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with everything Patton said there. The key is Jaren Jackson. Will he be able to play games? Like, that is the number one thing. Availability is the best ability. If you're not there, then it doesn't matter how good you are. If Zaire Williams can become a second or third guy for this Grizzlies team, that would be great, because they do have the supplemental pieces. If he can just develop, because Brooks is nice. I mean, he's pretty good. He fouls a lot like Jaren Jackson, but if he's out on the court, he's giving you all the effort that you can give. And then they have guys like Desmond Bane as well, who can support you with spreading the floor, shooting threes and whatnot. But speaking of going off the deep end, I wanted to hear your guys' opinion on this. So the Warriors pick, they have the 7th pick, and they had the 14th pick. They get Moses Moody and Kuminga. What if the Warriors package those two guys along with, let's say, Andrew Wiggins, and they trade them to the Portland Trail Blazers for Damian Lillard? Who says no?
Golden State says no easily. What? Why would you want to have Damian Lillard and Steph Curry? Like, that's
wow.
Defense.
Why wouldn't you want to have Damian
There's
Lillard
no
and Steph Curry? Okay, all right. So, the defense, you got Klay at the three, you got Draymond at the four, and then put somebody else at the five. At some point, the trade-off is ridiculous, because they're not going to keep up with you scoring. Yes, the defense at the guard position might suffer just a little bit, but if both dudes are dropping 30, it's not nothing you can do. Everybody gonna be firing from deep. Everybody.
All right, I wanna ask you this question then. When have you seen 2 6'4" guys and under just lead their guys to a championship?
This will be the first time.
Okay, it's very uncomfortable.
Patton gonna be hate. Patton gonna be mad. Them ain't gonna be real mad.
What you got, man? What do you think? What do you think?
I have a hard time believing that, solely just because of what the Lakers just did, and solely what I think. If you come up against a team like that with LeBron, AD, and Russell Westbrook, I think you'll rip them to shreds. And I think the same thing applies to a couple of other teams, mainly you look at Denver. I think if you put Jokic on just some scrub center down there, I just think it's over. I think what the Warriors should do, and this is in all honesty and all my hate aside, keep James Wiseman, because I think this is a kid who can really turn in to everything DeAndre Ayton wants to be and more. I think the skill-wise, what James Wiseman isn't even close. And I think to get rid of him for I say this in Damian Lillard, but I just think it'd be a tough fit. I think it'd be tough to kind of get used to. I say just see what you have the first couple of seasons. I think with having Klay Thompson coming back alongside Steph Curry in that group, see what you have there. I think you should wait before you start mortgaging the future, because you really don't know what that team would look like. That's just my opinion. I know the NBA doesn't exactly work like that. Wait and see what you have. That's not something in the NBA motto, I guess I would say. But that's what I would do personally, just because I think with the players they have on the floor, when healthy, I think James Wiseman is going to benefit so very well, because no eyes are going to be on him that he could really get you 15 very quickly.
Let me go ahead and say this too. I wouldn't want the Golden State Warriors to sell out to try to get a ring that desperately. That's my personal – I wouldn't like that, because don't get me wrong, we might as well go ahead and talk about this too, because Patton brought it up. With Russ going to the Wizards, so the Wizards will be getting Montrezl Harrell, KCP, and Kuzma to the Wizards for Russell Westbrook. I wouldn't want Golden State to just try to sell out that desperately when you have a future and you have veterans who know how to win, and you got a young guys just trying to develop into stardom. Why mess that up? Now, for the Lakers, we know good and well they were very quick to trade their young pieces to get rings. They got Anthony Davis like that. And what they do, it helped them out. In the next year, they won a ring. So they was like, we know the formula, let's continue it. And that's how they got Russell Westbrook, because at first, it was going to be Buddy Hield. Now, if you put LeBron James, Buddy Hield, and Anthony Davis together, people was already thinking then, okay, that's, we got the spacing and everything, and we can get a ring. Then 10 minutes later, not even 10 minutes later, because Woj dropped that bomb on us about Buddy Hield, and then not even 10 minutes later, Sham was like, oh, no, Russell Westbrook is going to L.A. And then you saw Woj just like, yes, what Sham said, it was correct. Russell Westbrook is going to L.A. I don't know how to feel about this trade to begin with, because, like I said, I feel like the Lakers are trying to low-key. Lakers fans, you can get mad at me all you want, because I've watched and listened to all of this for years now. We know good and well every year I didn't see Russell Westbrook in a Lakers jersey for the past 6 years. It felt like
since he graduated or left UCLA, he's been in a Lakers jersey.
Man, I didn't see this for a very long time. So this is not nothing common to me, but also it's just that. All right. So now the Lakers have Russ. You're going to throw Wesley Matthews at the two, LeBron James at the three, with 80s at the four. And then, unless you want to put 80 at the five, because you know how Lakers fans and Lakers Twitter is. They want Rudy Gay. They want DeMar DeRozan. They want Carmelo Anthony. They don't want everybody for a mid-level exception. And you know that mid-level exception is only $3.5 million. And we know that DeMar DeRozan ain't going to take that pay cut that deep from 25 to 3.5. Carmelo Anthony? Possibly. Rudy Gay? Possibly. So just for the sake of the argument, Rudy Gay or Carmelo Anthony can insert into the four, Anthony Davis at the five. Do you think that is exceptional spacing, Patton and Gabe? Do y'all think that is exceptional spacing for those three guys?
Well, and I think everything you've heard from a LeBron James of what makes him successful is you surround him with dead-eye three-point shooters. And Carmelo, I mean, he's probably the best shooter you have out on the floor, to be the best three-point shooter if you have out there on the floor, which is problematic, quite frankly, because – I don't know. I just don't see him being as reliable as you need him from the three-point line. When you look back at what LeBron's been great at, it's been firing to Shane Battier, to Kyle Korver, Mario Chalmers, guys like that to really knock down the three-point line. Seems like the Lakers have done the complete opposite since he's arrived in town to L.A. And whether that's smart or not, I mean, who am I to say? But I've seen my Cavaliers what many call a dead organization, a dumb organization. To me, they've surrounded LeBron with better talent and better supporting cast than what the Lakers have done. I know they're bringing in a high name and Russell Westbrook, but to me, I think this one's going to come crashing down like it normally would, because Russ, he's been in four teams in 4 years. That's problematic, guys. You just can't keep having that where a guy goes moving from team to team and you wonder, hey, maybe it's the guy at this point. Russ can fill up the stat sheet better than anyone I've ever seen personally, but when it comes to winning, it's just not a great play style for winning because he dominates the ball so much. And in a plus and minus sense, he's so far down the league. When you look at it, it's just tough to win games when he turns the ball over at the rate that he does. And he doesn't get the ball into the hands of guys like a James Harden, like a Kevin Durant. All that time he takes away from the ball, it's problematic for a guy who, quite frankly, is better than he is.
Well, guys, I know that this is going to sound like it doesn't make much sense, and every fiber in my body is telling me, no, Gabe, no, this is incorrect. But the Lakers are about to win a championship. It's going to work. At some point in the game of basketball, if you have the best players, they're more athletic than everybody else. You could just like mush people. Y'all ever been mushed? Like somebody just takes their hand and just put it in your face and just push your head away. I think that is figuratively what the Lakers are going to be able to do to a lot of teams out there. Now they will have to figure out the spacing part of it, because with LeBron James making $41 million, with Russell Westbrook making $44 million, and then Anthony Davis making $35 million, they dang near ain't going to have nobody else to throw the ball to. It's just going to be three dudes on the court. Like, it ain't going to be nobody to kick it out to.
That's why I said mid-level exceptions. That's only $3.5 million. Who's going to – that's better than minimums next. Your best three-point shooter – your best three-point shooter is going to be Wesley Matthews.
Yeah, so you're going to have to hope that he can do it. But you need to find guys – you need to find guys that can hit a three, but most importantly, defend, because other guys aren't going to be getting that many shots anyways. But if Anthony Davis, like the best shot on the floor for them, other than the LeBron James dunk, would be an Anthony Davis mid-range at like 55%. LeBron would be their best three-point shooter. You don't want him taking eight a game. So they're basically going to have to play, I think, a Spurs-type system of basketball where they're getting some mid-range shots and getting a lot of dunks, like some high percentage shots, because they're not going to be firing from three, and it's not going to be pretty how they're going to make it happen, but I think that they will be able to succeed and win a championship.
Now I'm not saying they're going to be just a bust. I'm not saying that at all. When you got three top 10 players, or if you want to say top 15 to be better. Three top
AD
10,
might not top. Even be top 10, but that's a difference. That's a different subject for a different day. But yeah, we'll go like top 17.
All right. Three top 17 players on the court at the same time, it's still going to be very tough to defend. But I just want to – it's going to be funny when – because that's another thing too, was that last year the Lakers was the worst three-point shooting team in the league. And you didn't get better – and you didn't get better from the three-point line. And you know that every team now is jacking up 15 to 20 threes, and they might jack up 15 threes and a half. So you're going to have to find other ways. I know you got, like, everybody loves the mid-range. I think the mid-range might be an art for them. But also you got to realize that three is better than two. So somebody's going to have to knock down shots. But I want to see – Russell Westbrook and LeBron, see how those guys play together. Because this is the first time in history that two players going to play on the court at the same time as teammates, where they have 20,000 points, 5,000 rebounds, and 5,000 assists. But that we're gonna see how that goes. We know Russ is ball dominant. We know that LeBron is ball dominant as well. AD is still going to want to get his shots. That's another great question. Who will be the third guy for the Lakers? Because I don't know. Who's going to be the third guy?
Who's more of an alpha, LeBron James or Russell Westbrook? And I think it's Russ.
Back. Back.
All I know is one of those guys has blown a 3-1 lead, and it ain't LeBron James. It's between Anthony Davis and Russell Westbrook, and I'm giving the edge to Anthony Davis just because he's done it in an NBA Finals. I've never seen Russ really do it past the Western Conference Finals, past a Game 5, if I'm completely honest. So I just see Russ has to be the one to make this work. I don't think it's on LeBron or Anthony Davis to kind of adjust their play because they've won a championship together. I think the new guy always has to be the one to adjust. And I think if they go trying to adjust to Russell Westbrook and let him have his ball dominant play for an entire quarter, I think that's where you get in trouble. And I know this is a bit off topic. This is my final thing on the Lakers and we can move on, but I keep seeing Andre Drummond pop up on my timeline, him tweeting out and him going on sports talk shows. Why in the world are we giving this clown more airtime? I saw him going, I can't even remember what show it was on, but he tweeted something to the effect of, I don't even want to repeat it, but it's this clown behavior from Andre Drummond. I tried to tell Lakers fans, don't expect anything. Don't expect anything at all. He's a locker room cancer. He dominates the ball more than Russell Westbrook, and he's about as talented as Brian Scalabrine. I about had it with Andre Drummond kind of pop into the conversation and just run his little mouth on Twitter. I've just seen enough of it. I blocked him on Twitter, and I never want to see any more of it. Had to get that out.
I don't know where Andre Drummond gonna be playing basketball next.
China
trying to get
that hurt my feelings.
He said China.
What is it, though? Him and Kuzma can go put up shots in Shanghai.
Oh, man. Dude, speaking of Kuzma, I think Kuzma's good, man. I really do. I think that he just was not able to get the opportunity that he needed playing on the LeBron James-led team, playing as basically like a third option at best on this team. And at times, he wasn't even the third option. It was Dennis Schroeder. It was a kick-out three to Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He wasn't able to get a rhythm like he did his rookie year. His rookie year, he ended up averaging 17 points. I think that he can do that again. I'm not sure if he's going to be able to do that on this Wizards team. Not that he won't be able to do it. They might trade him, like ship him off somewhere. But yeah, if he is on a team where he can be a first or second option, I think Kuz is going to be good. And he tried hard last year on defense. I think he's going to be a solid player. Prove y'all Lakers fans wrong who've been talking down on my man Kuzma.
I agree. I think Kuzma being that fifth option, well, fourth or fifth option, it just didn't help him out at all. And you got to realize a lot of times, too, it was only catch and shoot opportunities. It was very rare that he was just having – I don't think he had an ISO probably at all all of last season, let alone just trying to drive to the basket and get to the cup. But one thing I do want to say, people y'all might want to watch out for is Trez and Kuzma getting traded to the Wizards. I mean, from the Wizards to the Nets, because I know there's a lot of rumors talking that Spencer want to play with Bradley Beal. After Bradley Beal, I don't know why, but he still want to commit to the Washington Wizards and that franchise. But, so Spencer Dinwiddie might – get a sign and trade deal, and Kuzma might be going to the Nets. And that would be funny. I will say, if Kuzma gives buckets to the Lakers in the NBA Finals in the Brooklyn Nets uniform, because Lakers fans are going to be looking like, where was all this last year? And you'd be like, hey, bro, you can't – don't get mad at him now because he's on the other side. That's the thing. That's what I think what Kuz was talking about on Twitter, too, is just like, hey, don't get mad when I'm on the other side hooping. There's a lot – Lakers fans, I will say, Lakers fans – do not give any slouch, because I remember in the bubble, LeBron James and them was sagging off of Russell Westbrook, daring him to shoot, and they was trolling Russell Westbrook. So when Russell Westbrook might not be hitting threes, they will let loose on Russell Westbrook. It's going to be no sympathy. Even because he's a Laker, it won't matter. They're going to be telling him to get in the gym, shoot as many 500 threes, and make them. That's how they be on Twitter. I'm telling you, Pat, you laughing? Those folks are ruthless on Twitter.
Most entitled fan base, I think, in sports, to be honest. And when you've had Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson, and LeBron James in your organization, I don't know if you can
be anything different. On Kuzma, finally, I think he's a guy like that. I don't think he can be on a championship team just personally when he's the third or second guy yet. I just don't see that being the case. But I think he can, however long Bradley Beal wants to be on the Wizards, I could see them making make it into the playoffs in the East. But I just don't see him more than that right now. So a weird trade. I think Montrezl Harrell and Kyle Kuzma, I think the Wizards did well to get what they did, but they just got to move on when it wasn't working. And I don't know, Wizards had flashes of it working late in the regular season, but ultimately that just wasn't going to be a recipe for success.
I'm not sure if they'll make the playoffs. I wouldn't go to say that far, but I think Kuz is going to be a solid guy.
This just in, Kawhi Leonard is expected to decline his $36 million player option to become a unrestricted free agent. So, fellas, we might as well talk about this a little bit right now. We're going to have to send it to a break. All right, let's go ahead and send it to a quick break real quick. And then we can talk about this right after this on Just Talking Sports. Before we have to go to a short break, it was just announced that Kawhi Leonard is now officially an unrestricted free agent. So, guys, is he staying with the Clippers? Or where is he going? Because we know he's not going to L.A. Because he ain't gonna get paid with the Lakers. So is he staying or is he going?
Uncle Dennis said he getting out of here, baby. You're not staying with these scrubs, man. Nah, I really do believe that. I think that the Clippers are one of the best teams. With or without him, they are one of the best teams in the NBA. This is a good spot. And he's so good that he can just make the fit work. But if he was going to stay, he probably would have just taken his player option. But if he's decided to opt out, maybe he's surveying the field for a different team. He's like, man, I can't really do it with Paul George. So what team would I like to see him on? What if he went to – You know I love to see him on the Blazers. You know I want to see him on the Blazers. Come on, Kawhi. KD let me down in 2016. Please, please bring my championship hopes into fruition. Team up with Dame, baby. We getting after it. Come on. So hey, we'll see what happens.
Patton, I'm finna shut it down real quick for Sir Gabe, because guess what? They ain't even gonna have cash space to even buy pay the man 30 million. they finna sign Norman Powell back, and he finna get $20 million. So he finna sit in real tears over here. But I think Kawhi is gonna come back to the Clippers. I think he's just gonna get more dollars. He's supposed to get 36. He might be trying to aim for that 40 piece meal. And get that bread and butter from Steve. I don't really see him going anywhere else, because if you really look at it, look at the teams, it's not a lot of teams that's in contention that really just has major cap space for a guy to get just $40 million, unless it's going to be a sign and trade.
It's interesting, because all the reports all along was that Kawhi was happy and that Kawhi was going to accept his player option. And this kind of just came down, dropped it on our heads all of a sudden. To your point, I just don't think there's enough fit of a playoff team really with the cap space that Kawhi is wanting. So that's really the only reason I see him coming back. One thing I will say, I'm terrified. If Golden State gets Kawhi, I am going to be livid. I don't know how they do it. I don't know their cap situation at all. But, I mean, if they release Draymond Green and got Kawhi Leonard, I'm not doing this podcast anymore. I'll just go ahead and go out on record. But all joking aside, I just see him going back. I just see him kind of pressuring. He's got Steve Ballmer in the palm of his hand right now. I just don't see there's any chance they don't pay him, unless there's just physically no way they can pay him any bit more, which I think is a bit foolish and nonsensical. But I see Kawhi staying in L.A. That's the whole reason he left Toronto, was to come to L.A. and be in California.
Chris Paul declined his player option as well. He was going to get $44 million. I don't know if he's going to stay in Phoenix if he's going to decline a $44 million 1 year?
Man, that's hefty.
40, that's pretty hefty right there, man. I don't know. Like, that's some bread. That's some nice bread for Chris Paul. But where would he go?
For CP3, he could go to a myriad of places. Everybody always want him to go to the Knicks. Of course, you throw the Knicks out there. The Knicks suck. No
team. Nobody's going to the Knicks. I'm sorry.
Nobody's going to the Knicks. Nobody. I don't know where CP3 would go. I was going to ask y'all how much cap space does Denver have, because they're only paying Jokic and Murray right now, because that could be a landing spot for Mr. Leonard.
Yes. What about the Mavs? What about the Mavs?
The Mavs
could got space.
Luka's still on his rookie deal right now. I mean, they're going to have to pay him soon, but right now, cap space definitely isn't an issue.
How about this? Kawhi Leonard, the ultimate FU to LeBron, he goes to Cleveland and wins them a championship.
Who says no to that, Gabe? I'm right with you there. I'm going to bring my picket fence out, and I'm going to put the signs up.
Patton would turn into the biggest Kawhi fan you'd have ever seen.
This LeBron jersey I got in my closet, I'd burn it if Kawhi came down to Cleveland.
It'd be awesome. Wow, this is awesome. So when does free agency opens up? What, August 6th, right?
Technically, August 6th is the new year. That's the new year. Yep.
Awesome. So then, man, we definitely going to have to get one after this, because this NBA season is going to be awesome. And we haven't even talked NFL yet. So I'm definitely excited about this.
Yeah. Training camp is underway right now. Then you got all the COVID protocols and coaches being upset and guys already being out. Yeah, we got a lot that we're going to have to talk about. But that's all that we're going to have here on today. I hope you guys enjoy it. Got some good laughter here, and because I know I did, and all of us did. My name is Marcus Modi, Gabe Jones, Patton Cook. We just want to say so long to you, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of the JTS Podcast.
Peace.